When you think about it, how many songs do you think there are that refer to falling in love? There must be hundreds, maybe even thousands. You know, I think I'm falling in love, falling in love again. And then there's, then I fooled around and fell in love. You like that one? If I fell in love with you, would you promise to be true? Help me, I think I'm falling in love again. And on it goes. We can spend all day here thinking of songs that talk about falling in love. I have a question for you. How come we say fall in love? And doesn't the word falls kind of sound like an accident? I mean, if you fall from the roof, isn't that a bad thing, you know? As opposed to if you jump from the roof, well, at least that implies you meant to do it, right? You know, even if that's not necessarily the smartest thing to do, you meant to do it. But constantly and over again in our culture, we talk about falling in love as if it just clicks. You know, baby, it just happens. That magic moment that I couldn't control it. It was irresistible. I couldn't help myself. I fell in love. Don't people ever jump into love? Don't people ever decide to love? And maybe that falling in love business does apply to, you know, this kind of chemistry thing that just can happen between a boy and a girl, a man and a woman. You know, maybe it does have some validity. But does such a process apply to our other relationships in life? How does the idea of falling in love accidentally square with what we've just read about from the third chapter of 1 John in the Word of God? How does that fit? You know, when I went to seminary, and I bet every seminary student, when they studied Greek, you know, you had to study Greek, which is what the New Testament's written in. This is the first book you study. You know why? Because the Greek in this thing is real simple. It's straightforward. It's not complicated. It's not convoluted like some of the other Gospels the other letters. The letters of Paul are real fancy Greek and real convoluted in their thinking. The book of Hebrews is really sophisticated. But John and 1 John letters, 2 John, all those, they're real simple. They read like a child's book. They have simple declarative sentences. And they're full of commands. Say, do this. Or it says, this is true. Do that. And therefore, it's a lot easier to read. 1 John says a lot about God's love. It says a lot about our love for God. And it says a lot about our loving other people because we love God. And what does it mainly say? We read it here this morning in the third chapter. It says, love one another. It calls that a command. It's not a suggestion. It's not a hint. It's not implied. It's a command. Do this. Love one another. I command you to love, says God. Hello? Doesn't that sound kind of strange? I command you to love. There's nothing natural about Christian love. It's not embedded in our souls. We didn't come hardwired that way. Not at all. Children don't come wired to be selfless and thoughtful and compassionate. Now, I know there are some children that seem more predisposed to kindness and thoughtfulness and caring. They're just kind of like that naturally. But most of the time, what do we have to do with children? What are the natural tendencies that come and phrases that come out of their mouths? Such things as, me first, what about me? Hey, that's mine, give me that. And we parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles are constantly drilling these little kids on what? No, you got to share, honey. The right thing to do is to share. Oh, how do you think she feels about that? Can you, don't think about yourself all the time. Be nice, you know. It's something that kids have to learn. It's something we all learned. And even when it comes to love, as expressed in Jesus Christ, Love is something you decide to do. Now, let me just ask you to imagine meeting somebody and you find him to be totally repulsive. He's ugly, he's inconsiderate, he's rude, self-centered, and arrogant as can be. Oh, he's even smelly, okay? Every other word out of his mouth is a four-letter word. He's vulgar and just no fun to be around. And he's the most negative, condescending person that you've ever met. I hope you don't have somebody in mind while I'm describing all this, but imagine meeting a person like that. And then somebody walking up to you and say, "Now, I demand that you love him." Your first reaction is probably to say, "And I demand that you stick your head in a bucket of water and take 5 deep breaths. I'm not going to do it. I can't stand this guy." Now, what if Jesus walks up to you and says, "I command you to love this guy"? We see there's no if about it. Jesus has walked up. He does walk up to you. He did today when you heard 1 John 3rd chapter and what's in there. He said, "Love this guy." Oh, and you thought he was just talking about family members you don't like too much, or friends, or people in the church that you don't get along with too great. You thought he was talking about those folks? No, he was talking about everybody that Jesus loves. And who is that? Everybody, including this guy who is so obnoxious and ill-tempered so-and-so, and I just don't like him. You know, you might even protest to Jesus. "You know, Jesus, I don't feel any love for this person. How can I love him if I feel so much disgust for him?" And Jesus answers back and says, "Excuse me, but when did I ever say that feeling had anything to do with it? I never said you had to feel love. I always just said you had to do love. You had to act toward him or her in a loving way. That's what I always talked about." And we recoil with that, especially in our day and time. We say, "What? You mean feelings don't have anything to do with it?" Time and time again, I'm told that feelings are everything. If you don't feel it, it ain't there, it ain't real. Feelings and how I feel about something's the most important thing. I'm told that all the time. "And so, honey, even though I've been married to you for 16 years, I just don't feel what I used to feel for you, and I'm out of here because of my feelings or lack of them." And when we equate love with our feelings, I believe God smacks himself in the head and says, "Y'all don't have any idea what my son was talking to you about, huh? What Jesus said and what he did, you don't get it, do you?" Jesus told us a story about a man going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, robbed, beaten, left half dead alongside the road, and a priest came by. Now, maybe the priest really felt sorry for this guy bleeding and dying there on the road, but the priest kept walking. And then a Levite came by, another religious guy, and he may have even said a prayer for that poor fellow back there, but the Levite kept a-walking. Now, a Samaritan came up, a half-breed, the low-life that they all hated in their society, and it says he had pity on the man. But even if he didn't feel a thing, you know what he did? He got down. He bandaged his wounds. He poured ointments on his lacerations. He eased him up on his donkey. He took him to an inn and he left him there and he paid for his medical care. He might not have felt a thing for this guy, but Jesus says, "Okay, which of these three really loved?" And everybody has to admit, well, it has to be number three, the one who acted. The one who decided to love. Now, you might not feel like loving the person who annoys the fire out of you, but you have to push past your feelings and treat them in a loving way. You've done this before, haven't you? You know, how about that witch at work? You know, that man, she's so inconsiderate. She pushes your buttons. She pulls your levers. She just annoys the fire out of you. And lo and behold, she comes up and asks you for a favor. and you don't feel like doing it because she doesn't deserve it, but you did it anyway, didn't you? Why? Because you pushed past your feelings and you decided, I'm going to love. I'm going to do the right thing. Does your mother love you? Did your mother love you, you know? Do you think she always felt like loving you? Heck no! There were times when she just said, I'd just as soon sell them to gypsies if they were going by. Doggone. I remember a vacation time we took many years ago when I was a kid, and my mother was so fed up with my sister and my brother and me. Apparently we were being just real brats and just thought we ought to have the world at our fingertips, and we were inconsiderate and we were bad-mouthing, or we were just complaining, uncooperative, as only kids can do, you know. And I remember her telling us, I'm just fed up with it. I don't feel a thing for you. Y'all are just disgusting. This is awful. Well, the reason I remember it is because it was such a rare occurrence. It rarely happened. But boy, it happened on this vacation. And you know what? She still kept on loving us. She didn't leave us alongside the road there in Minnesota, okay? Dad wouldn't let her. He said, He opened the back door and let us slide in. No. She didn't leave us along the road. She kept feeding us. She kept taking care of us. She kept meeting our needs. She kept making sure we were safe. As disgusted as she was, feelings didn't have anything to do with it because Mom decided to love. When you love someone, you also tend to think the best about him or her. Give them the benefit of the doubt. You overlook their weaknesses, and you tend to minimize their faults, and you magnify their strong points. You guys are doing this now, you know. If you dislike Obama, and if you think that he's just not the person who you want to be president, well, you get all hot and angry if one of his supporters says something bad or says something inappropriate. You think, well, Obama, he ought to fire that guy, right? But if you really love Hillary, and if you think she's just absolutely the greatest and ought to be the president, and one of her supporters speaks up and says something bad or inappropriate, well, then you tend to say, well, you know, no one can completely control what their supporters say, and surely she doesn't feel that way, so, yeah, it's okay. What have you done? You cut somebody slack, and you cut somebody a lot of criticism based on how you feel about them. And love will have a way of doing that for us. This is why we tend to love our mothers so much, because they elevate our status in life and they cut us so much slack on our weak points. And so they call their kid handsome when he's really honestly kind of homely, you know. And they just crow about your academic achievements when really they were kind of average, you know. And they forgive their son's crimes, even though it was bad and heinous and no excuse for it, but Mom just keeps on loving. Now you take the model of a best mother's love, and God says to you today, now you go out and you do the same thing. Love like that. I command you to do it for everybody. Everybody? Come on, Lord. You can't be serious. And God says, yes, I'm serious, because I'm not telling you to feel love. I'm commanding you to act love to everybody, no matter how you feel about them. And if somebody's in charge, isn't it important to follow his commands? You guys, were anybody ever in the army? Did you follow orders when you were in the army or the military branch you were in? When the staff sergeant looked at you and said, or the drill sergeant looked at you and said, we're going to take a hike, 20-mile hike. Come on, let's get going. Did you express your feelings and say, you know, Sarge, I really am tired right now, and I'm not feeling so good, and so can I pass on this? Do you think that sergeant cared about how you felt about that? The only thing he cared about was you jumping to your feet saying, yes, sir, and start marching. That's all he cared about, because he gave a command. When your boss at work tells you to do a job and she expects it to be done by a certain time, does she really care whether you enjoy doing that task or not? Well, maybe. But more than likely, she's interested in you getting it done. And the best, most loving employee is the one who's interested in doing her best work for the company and doing the very best job, whether she likes doing this thing or not. But if you do it and do it well, then you really love the boss, you really love the company, no matter how you feel about it. Love is simply something you decide to do. At a recent gathering of our ministers in this area, of our association nearby Baptist churches, we, a couple months ago, heard from a Dr. Everett Worthington. And Dr. Worthington is a VCU professor of philosophy. And his main emphasis that he talks about with people is forgiveness and forgiving people and the dynamics of forgiving and how important forgiveness is in our lives as Christians. And he gave this wonderful talk about forgiveness. And forgiveness for him is not theoretical. About 10 years ago, a man broke into his mother's home in Tennessee to rob him, and in the process of doing so, she killed him. He killed her. Dr. Worthington said he forgave his mother's killer. You might think that it probably took him years to do so. You know how long it took him? 24 hours. In 24 hours, he had decided to forgive his mother's murderer. I find that absolutely astounding. I find that absolutely amazing. You think, well, did he hate his mother that much? No, he loved his mother dearly. But he decided to love and forgive as completely as God does. And you say, well, that's impossible. But he did it because love is something you decide to do. Decide. So you see this command in 1 John, it won't go away. As annoying as it is, it's there and it's real. And if we've been wronged and if we've been hurt, we want to hold on to our resentments and our feelings. You know what? The Bible here says, I'm sorry, all excuses are off. I command you to love one another. If you love people who love you, the Bible makes clear in several places, well, you're no better than the heathen or the atheist. Even they do that. But I'm telling you to go beyond that, to love people you don't feel love for. The Christian faith makes this stunning moral demand upon us. It really does. Stuff like love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. If someone hurts you, pay him back with kindness, not harm. And do it without gritting your teeth. Do it without a clenched fist. It's a superhuman effort, but do it. Let me ask you, did you decide to love Jesus? You decided one day, didn't you? And you've been carrying that out. You know what? If you decided to love Jesus, you also really decided to obey Jesus. And didn't he give a command here? And you also decided to love other people, because that's one of his commands. Otherwise, 1 John says, if you don't really love Jesus. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if there isn't someone in this world today that you just don't like, that you don't want to have anything to do with, that maybe intensely and maybe mildly you hate him or her. Can you forgive them? Can you love them? Well, I promise you, if you wait for your feelings to show up first before you do so, you'll never get around to it. So, you can decide to love that person. You know you can. So why don't you decide to do that today with whoever that person is? Go out and find them, and then just do the nicest thing you can possibly think of for them. God's done that for you.
God's done that for all of us. Now we got to go out and do the same. This is the essence of love. Love is the theme. Love is the theme is what we'll sing now. It's number 545. Love is supreme. Love is a lot of things, but it's what we're called to do and to stretch for and to reach out to do. So let's sing this, and if there's some way you say, yeah, I love God, and I want to share that love with him and other people. I love this church family and want to be part of it. I love God now more than I have before. What would be an expression of faith you'd like to make today? Make it now while we sing this song and share it in a good, good way. Let's sing.